everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on drug side effects when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Well, it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they have been banned from our public schools, public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And now we see schools teaching the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a very radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent? But she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked in the past. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 not only practiced, but they advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. Now, there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request for your free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about drugs and drug side effects. There's a drug out there called antidepressant drugs for children. And the scariest thing is that nobody knows what the risks of these depression drugs are for children. Forest Laboratories, the manufacturer of the antidepressant Celexa, Lexapro, is the latest manufacturer to issue warnings about the possibility that patients with major depressive disorders, both adult and pediatric, may experience worsening of their depressions and or the emergence of suicidal ideation and behavioral suicidality. Suicidality. The label further warns. Now, this is the label on the drug. You buy this drug, boys and girls, and it's called Celexa, Lexapro. Let's underline that. Celexa, Lexapro. And they tell us it's the latest manufacturer to issue warnings about the possibility that patients with major depressive disorders, both adult and children, may experience worsening of their depression Now, why did we buy this drug? Come on, children. Why do we buy this drug? It's called Lexapro. Well, because we're depressed. We're depressed. Why are we depressed? Nobody says. Nobody comes to you and says, we are depressed because... Nobody knows why you're depressed. You just wake up one day and you don't feel real good and you say, I am depressed. Well, you go to the doctor. Not entirely clear why you'd go to the doctor because you're depressed. But you know, if I didn't feel good and I was depressed, I think I'd go turn on Red Skelton. Or I Love Lucy. Or something that's funny or something that's humorous. You know, that's what I do. I'm kind of depressed. I have a friend that's dying, and I'm sad, and I don't feel good, and I'm depressed. But I don't think a drug is going to help me. It isn't going to help him. And I don't think that taking a drug that might cause me to commit suicide is going to help me. I don't think that his gravestone and my gravestone together are going to solve my depression or help him or help me. So I thought, what is it that helps people that are depressed? I don't know about you boys and girls, but when I was a kid, we used to try to do something that was funny, something humorous, something that would take our minds off of whatever it was that was causing us to be sad and depressed. Let's go to the movies. Let's go to the amusement park. Let's go to the park. Let's go to the zoo. Let's go do something. Let's go on a picnic. Let's go do something so that we can get this burden out of our minds for a while, go think about something else. Today, when people get depressed, they want to go to a shrink and get some kind of pill and some kind of an antidepressant or something. And now we're finding out that when we do that, it causes us to get suicidal and we want to commit suicide. Or we want to go to public school and shoot up the school and kill a bunch of other people. Now, if you think that's too far-fetched, a California jury found that a man accused of attempted murder and assault acted under the intoxicating influence of Zoloft. Now, I've seen this Zoloft. I don't know what it is. I guess it's an antidepressant. It's advertised. You know, you'll see it in Reader's Digest, or you'll see it, you know, advertised on television or something. And evidently this guy must have been depressed, and instead of going to the park or the zoo or something else, he went to the drugstore, went to his doctor, I guess, first, and got his prescription for Zoloft. And then, under the influence of Zoloft, many people do this with alcohol, you know, they go out and get drunk, and then they go out and do irrational things. Boys and girls, mind-altering drugs that cause you to do irrational things, do you really, honest to God, believe that those are good for you? So, if you'll think about it in pragmatic terms, maybe drugs aren't as good as, maybe drugs are worse than the problem of depression itself. They tell us a little more. In light of recent revelations about the severe risks associated with antidepressants, the soaring prescribing of these drugs for children and adolescents is raising concern in Europe, Australia, Canada, and the United States. National, international, and local media are focusing on the issue of drug safety and breach of scientific integrity. I'm going to underline that. Breach of scientific integrity. I wonder what they mean by that. In medical reports, public awareness about evidence that these drugs have triggered violent outbursts and suicidal, homicidal acts in some individuals. All right, let's underline some individuals. Remember, we've talked about this. It doesn't affect everybody the same way. In other words, if you gave 1,000 people Zoloft and 1,000 people went out and committed murder, you know, it wouldn't take you very long to figure out Zoloft causes people to commit murder. That's more insidious than that. Zoloft doesn't cause everybody to commit murder or to become suicidal, only a few. And the way we know that is that it raises the risk. All right, so I talked about this last time. You take 1,000 people and you give them this particular drug. And then you take a look at that group of people and you say, well, how do they behave? How do they perform? How do they live their lives? And you find out that in the general population, people that aren't taking this drug, suicide rate is 10, let's just say 10 per 100,000. But in this group of people, it raises to 20 per 100,000. So you can't say that the drug causes people to commit suicide, but it sure as hell doesn't prevent it. Now, does it? And we see an increased proportion. In fact, the number of people committing suicides doubles, or the violent outbursts double. And that's what you're seeing with these antidepressant drugs. And I mentioned this last time. I picked up more than one article, there's three or four now that I've seen, where researchers have taken a look at the people that commit these acts, children. For instance, at Columbine, two young boys, and they're teens, 16 years old. Something like that, 14, 15, 16 years old. They come into school and they shoot up the school. They kill 10 or 15 students there. And so naturally, you know, people that are in the research field, they take a look at that and they get all the facts and figures together. And in every case of these school shootings, these children, these students, these young people are on some kind of a psychotic antidepressant drug. Now, we can't go to the next step and say that these antidepressant drugs cause school shootings, but they, again, boys and girls, pay attention, they sure as hell don't prevent them. If every one of these students that are shooting up their schools is on an antipsychotic drug, while it may be true that hundreds of students are on the psychotic drugs or antipsychotic drugs that don't shoot up their schools, and this is the point that the drug companies make, well, you know, thousands of people are on these drugs, and they're not out killing people and shooting up the schools. Yeah, but every single one of the school shootings involves students who were on these drugs. So shouldn't we look a little harder at these drugs and the other drugs that these children are taking, or the nutritional deficiencies or nutritional imbalances that are triggering these bizarre events? And as I pointed out a little earlier, this Zoloft over here, a California jury, now, true, it's only one case. But the jury was persuaded that this guy, you know, before he was on Zoloft, was all right. He gets on Zoloft and he goes bonkers. Now, when asked by WebMD whether it's good or bad that more and more children are preschoolers, even preschoolers, I mean, you get children that are not even going to school yet. I'm gonna bracket this paragraph. Boys and girls, little children, 3, 4, 5 years old, are on antidepressant drugs? What in the hell is that all about? How in the hell do 3, 4, and 5 year olds become depressed? Depressed over what? Saddened over what? Death? I don't think a 3, 4, 5 year old kid even knows what death is. I'm depressed because of a friend who's dying. And it's depressing. People get depressed. It's a normal emotion. Have you ever been happy? Have you ever laughed? Have you ever cried? Those are called emotions. There's a normal range of emotions that people go through. Now, if I'm happy, do I need to take a depressant? If I'm sad, do I need to take an antidepressant? I mean, can't you go through? Can't you cope with your normal range of emotions? Now, you know, this isn't the first guy that I've ever had, a first friend that's ever died, and he's not going to be the last. When my father died, I was sad for 3 years. It took me 3 years to get over my father's death. And professionals in the field say, well, it's about normal. It's about normal. You know, some people get over it a little sooner. I mean, if your old man was kicking the hell out of you when you were a kid, you could probably get over his death a little sooner than if he was maybe taking you out and buying you ice cream. But moral of the story is, I think most of us are sad when a relative, like my Aunt Bessie, Uncle Buster, my grandma, or granddad, or dad, or mom, or, you know, people die. But you know, when you tell me that 3, 4, and 5-year-olds, you know, preschoolers are on antidepressants, it brings me down to the line that says, I believe there's a manufactured epidemic going on. Somebody's selling us a bill of goods. Who's doing that? Now, Australian doctors wrote 250,000 antidepressant prescriptions for children and adolescents in 2003, out of a population of 20 million. However, Australian psychiatrists, like their British and Canadian counterparts, are expressing skepticism and concern about the practice. Dr. George Halas, H-A-L-A-S-Z, Halas, a child and adolescent psychiatrist in Monash, or at the Monash Medical Center in Australia, has no doubt that antidepressants are overprescribed for children. Why are parents buying antidepressants for children in the first place? Who's selling these parents on the idea that their children are depressed and they need these antidepressants? Somebody, you know, I mean, I've never run across a kid. I never did. I never took my allowance money and went into a drugstore and said, gee, what kind of drugs can I buy today? When I was a youngster, you know, a kid that had a few bucks in his pocket and wanted to go out and buy gasoline for his car, movie tickets to the movie. He wanted to buy some toy or some gimmick or game or something, you know, that would be something fun. You know, we were interested in fun things. Children are interested in fun things. So somebody's got to be determining that children are becoming depressed. Well, if that's the case, what's causing the depression? What's going on in the world today? It can't be nuclear war. Hell, the Cold War is over. We're not hiding under our desks. You know, when I was a kid going to school, we had atomic bomb drills where you left your room and went into the hallways. You got under your desk. Things like that. I mean, you know, there was a real threat in 1948, 1954. Concerning atomic war, and they used to say, well, my God, how is this affecting the children? Didn't affect me one way or the other. I didn't know there was a problem until I became an adult. You know, at age 8, 9, 10, 12, I didn't know there was a problem. I didn't know what death was. I didn't know what atomic war was. I just knew that there were fire drills, and we got up, and we left the building. I knew there were atomic bomb drills, and we went to the hallways. We didn't leave the building. We went to the hallways, and we got down on the floor and crouched down next to an inside wall. And then we had other drills, you know, that did tell us, well, if you see the flash, it's too late to get into the hallway. Get under your desk. That was when the flash came. I wasn't depressed by it. I didn't know of any other students that were depressed by it. We didn't have any Ritalin in 1950. Nobody was shooting up the schools in 1950. When was the first school shooting? Can you remember? We weren't having these kind of psychotic episodes like Columbine in 1950, 55, 60. So something has come along. Something has occurred in the last 20 or 30 years. Now, I'll tell you what's occurred. In the 1990s, the consumption of drugs doubled in a 7 or 8 year period from 1990 to 1997. Doubled. Boys and girls, we're taking more and more drugs, and more drugs are causing more and more side effects. Columbine is a side effect. Well, they got more. The Australian newspaper, The Age, reports Dr. Halas believes depression and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder are misdiagnosed in children. For example, grief can be misread as depression and could lead to children being medicated and tagged as flawed products. Were you ever depressed as a child? God, I used to get real depressed when my old man would come in there with his belt and whip me. Boy, that's depressing. So I'd get real depressed. But I didn't go out and shoot up the school. Old Dad didn't put me on some kind of drugs. I wasn't suffering from any side effects, and I got over the depression, and I went on with my life. Now remember, insanity is the inability to cope with life. It's an inability to solve problems. People that are insane are not stupid. People that are insane have PhDs. People that are insane are very intelligent people. As I pointed out earlier on, I said, you know, as the old joke goes, you know, I may be insane, but I'm not stupid. implying, of course, that the lawyer who couldn't figure out what to do when he lost his 5 lug nuts off of the wheel of his car didn't know how to solve his problem. He was amazed when the crazy guy said, well, take a lug nut off of one of the other 3 wheels each, and then you'll have 3 lug bolts that'll get you into a parts store where you can buy some more lug bolts. So insanity, then, is an inability to cope with or to solve a problem. That's why I mentioned early on, I think America is suffering from a national insanity. You don't know how to deal with your children. You don't know how to cope with these little monsters. It's called discipline. If you looked in the Bible, you'd find that discipline. A man that hates his child doesn't discipline him. A man that loves his child disciplines that child. Well, so says God in the book of Proverbs, you know, if you can believe God. In the United States, more than 10 million SSRI prescriptions. I don't know what an SSRI prescription is, but whatever it is. This type of prescription has been written for children and adolescents last year. I guess that's referring to the year 2005. Doctors and parents were misguided by reassurances from leading child psychiatrists who have substantial, ongoing financial ties to drug manufacturers. Oh. You mean psychiatrists and doctors have substantial economic interests in the drug companies and in the drugs that they sell? Well, just because the doctor has a substantial financial interest in the drugs that he's selling, is that any reason for you to buy it? I'm sure that my dentist has a substantial financial interest in taking x-rays of my mouth. He charges me $35 each time he does that. And I'm sure that every patient that comes in, let's just be pragmatic people, you're a dentist. And you're looking at, oh, let's say 4 people an hour. And then 8 hours a day, that's 30 people every day. So we take our famous Sharp Texas Instruments EL1197G3 calculator and we plug in 30 times 35. Boys and girls, that's $1,050. Okay? So you and I are dentists, and we're having coffee over at the coffee clutch, and we're chit-chatting a little bit, and I say to you, how can I increase my revenue? I want to increase my income. And you say to me, well, here's what I've done. You see, normally, if there's a question in our minds as to whether there's a cavity between two teeth, we take an x-ray. So what I do is I take an x-ray of the whole mouth and charge $35 every time a patient comes in. I do 30 patients a day, and I charge $35, so I make an extra $1,000 a day. And it costs me $10 every time I buy film and pay for my x-ray machine and so on. So I net $25. So my net profit's 25 times 30. I net $750 a day by x-raying every patient. And so I say to you, yeah, but x-rays are dangerous, and, you know, x-rays, you know, could cause cancer, and you know, and they ought to be used with great discretion. And you say to me, come on, Gordon, you know, grow up. Business is business. You want to make more money? Sell more x-rays. And it really works well because nobody ever objects. Now, I mentioned to you that I objected. I went into a doctor's office, a dentist's office, and he wanted to take an x-ray. And, of course, I've been reading National Geographic and Reader's Digest and various articles on x-rays. And I noticed that whenever I'm taking an x-ray, the x-ray people, they all leave the room. They just leave me in there by myself as they zap me with the x-ray. Now, if this x-ray is harmless and the x-ray thing is focused on my mouth, it isn't even focused on you, why would you leave the room? So right away, I picked right up on that. I said, oh, my God, you know, these x-rays are so damn dangerous. They're not only dangerous to the guy that's getting the x-ray, they're dangerous to the people giving them. They won't even stay in the same room when they're given the x-ray. And somebody says, yeah, but they're given 30 a day. That's why they leave the room. Well, then, if you're giving 30 x-rays a day, and 30 x-rays a day are dangerous, well, then, 30 x-rays over a period of time must be just as dangerous to me. And someday I may actually need one of these x-rays. This is the point that doctors have been making over antibiotics. That just prescribing and giving antibiotics builds up a tolerance in your body until one day you become antibiotic resistant. So then one day you actually come down. It's not kind of like the little boy crying wolf. You know, you don't feel good, or you think you don't feel good, or you got too much money in your pocket again. You need to get rid of some of it, so you go to the doctor. And the doctor says, well, let me give you this prescription for an antibiotic. You go down, you fill it, and you take all these antibiotics on top of all of the antibiotics that you get from all the food you eat. And one day, you're totally antibiotic resistant. Then you go down to Flo's Whorehouse, pick up a dose of clap. You come into the doctor, you say, hey, I got a little runny issue here, and I need some help. And the doctor says, oh, you've got gonorrhea. We need to give you penicillin or some kind of an antibiotic. And lo and behold, you are now antibiotic resistant. The antibiotic's no longer effective in your body, and so now you die from gonorrhea. Come on, troops. There may actually be a time when you need penicillin. Do you want to make your body resistant to the antibiotics just because you got too much money to spend and you need to throw it away on the doctor? Hell, why don't you go down to Six Flags and blow it on the roller coaster? And then you wouldn't be as depressed. How in the hell can you be depressed riding a roller coaster? Boys and girls, there's no such thing as depression on a roller coaster. It's impossible. Terror, maybe. Fear. Puke. Maybe, but not depression. You know, next time you feel depressed, go to Six Flags. That'll cure your depression. Now, notice these SSRI prescriptions have been written for children and adolescents last year. Doctors and parents were misguided by reassurances from leading child psychiatrists who have substantial ongoing financial ties to drug manufacturers. That's the bottom line. Money. We sell x-rays to dental patients coming in to make money, not because we need to see what's between your teeth. We are selling you antidepressant drugs, not because your kid's depressed, but because we want to sell it and make money. So you come in and say, geez, my kid's jumping up and down, his teacher is bummed out at him, and the doctor says, Ritalin. I say, recess. You know, children have a lot of energy. Take that kid out and put him to work. Let him go out there and kick a ball around in the playground in 100-degree temperatures for half an hour, and the kid will come back and calm him right down. I was always calmed down when I came in. I was so damn tired when I came in, I couldn't do my schoolwork. I guess I need a little Coke at that point in time, huh? A little pick-me-upper. Leading academic psychiatrists and professional associations such as the American Academy of Pediatrics, called the AAP, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, that's called the AACAP, and the Columbia University, and the institution contracted by the FDA to examine the safety data from pediatric SSRI trials are on record defending the prescribing of antidepressants for children, providing the industry with the legitimizing seal of professional approval to expand the SSRI market to children. Now, who's recommending this? Okay. Well, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. Well, Jesus, you go into a psychiatrist, and he says, here, give that kid this drug over here. The psychiatrist's doing his job, isn't he? I mean, after all, that's why you took the kid in there in the first place. What if you took your kid in to the psychiatrist and he said, there's nothing wrong with your kid. The bill's $150. Nothing wrong with that kid. Are you going to go back to that psychiatrist? Hell no. You're saying, well, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. You go to another psych. Oh, my God, your child is depressed. We've got to do something. We've got to give him pills. You know, it makes you feel better. Well, it makes you feel better because for the $150 you spent for the second opinion, he said, well, there's something wrong with your kid, which is what you thought in the first place, or you wouldn't have taken your kid to the psychiatrist to start with. So the second psychiatrist is simply selling you what you wanted to buy when you walked in the door. That's what every car salesman does. Every salesman sells you what you want to buy. Now, where did you get the idea that your kid needed this drug? Well, you got it off of TV. Somebody planted that idea in your head. Somebody. Some ad. Truth of the matter is, your kid needed a little more work. Your kid needed to get off the couch and quit watching TV for a while and go out and kick the ball around, and that'll calm him down. If you take him off sugar, that'll calm him down too. Sugar and exercise. You know, get him off the sugar and get him to exercise, and then you won't need the Ritalin. All right, and that's just one more side effect. Just one more cause and effect relationship. And then we've got this DES legacy. I can't even pronounce this word. Dithylstilbestrol. Called DES. The Washington Post reports that DES was the biggest nostrum in quackery since snake oil. The medical community looked the other way. They didn't want to admit the mistake that they'd made. This comes from www.ahrp.org. This is a dynamite article here. It's 5 pages. If you're online, go to www.ahrp.org. And it was published 3-9-0309-23A. Well, I guess that's not a date on here. Well, here's the date, 5406. So just published here the other day. We just got it off. It comes from the Washington Post newspaper, the DES Legacy. DES Legacy. It's called The Biggest Nostrum in Quackery Since Snake Oil. This crap's put out here by your doctor, by your druggist, by the pharmaceutical industry, by the Food and Drug Administration, for crying out loud. Now, we've probably covered in this series of programs 10, 15, 20 drugs. There was 12 drugs, 10 drugs, 7 drugs, remember? That have been taken off the market. Out of thousands, these are a few that have been taken off the market. Boys and girls, this is the tip of the iceberg. Tip of the iceberg. My God, there's thousands of these drugs out there. Now, I've come up to a conclusion. I don't take any drugs, including aspirin. None. Zero. Zilch. When God designed us in the Garden of Eden, He did not design us with a hypodermic needle sticking out of our arm or a need for drugs. In fact, He went a step further. By the time He got down to Moses, He said, hey, this drug crap over here is witchcraft. Don't do it. There's a statutory prohibition punishable by death. Witchcraft is a capital felony. Did you know that? Drug taking is witchcraft, and drug taking and witchcraft are capital felonies. And not just for drug dealers. Under the Mosaic law, we would stone every doctor, every pharmacist, and every drug company manufacturer. Probably not the employees, but at least the manufacturers. Stone them all. Kill them. Dead. We'd also stone every user of the drugs, which would, here in the United States, leave us with a population of approximately 3 million. It takes us back to about 1779. The population in 1779 was about 3 million. Now, of course, all the drug manufacturers and the druggists and all the doctors and all the people that are taking these drugs are opposed to that solution. And with good cause. I don't blame them. I'd be opposed to it, too, if I was a drug addict. That's why I got off drugs. I said, well, no sense giving the old man the finger, because one of these days he may come back here and be a little ticked off at us. Might want a remedy. Hey, let me give you a reminder here, and then we'll take a look at this remedy. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. You know, talking about side effects, there's another article here you might want to read. On many common medications can add unexpected pounds. It isn't going to kill you. It isn't going to make you go berserk and shoot up a school, but they'll make you add a lot of weight. And I don't mean just a little weight. I mean a lot of weight. One 42-year-old woman, for instance, gained 42 pounds after taking lithium, which is a drug for mood swings. A 36-year-old supermarket worker gained 240 pounds while taking prednisone. P-R-E-D-N-I-S-O-N-E, a steroid. Now, this is a really important subject, said Dr. Madeline H. Fernstrom, director of the Weight Management Center at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Weight gain is among the side effects listed in official information sheets for some of the most frequently used prescription drugs in the United States. These include drugs taken by the tens of millions of people for diabetes, depression, high blood pressure, gastric reflux, and heartburn and serious mental disorders. The very same drugs that we're talking about right here add unexpected pounds, which then is another side effect which causes obesity, which is another health hazard. Do you need to gain 30, 40, 50 pounds? Are you a skinny, undernourished, malnourished runt? Then you should take Celebrex. You should take Ritalin. You should get off on some drug over here, because this is guaranteed to help you gain weight, gain pounds. If you want that one, it's www.post-gazette.com. They got a hyphen in here between post and gazette. That's www.post-gazette.com. Many common medications can add unexpected pounds. Now, I selected 14 articles. 14 articles with probably 50, 60 pages of material on side effects from drugs, vaccines, etc. If we don't have a solution to the problem, then I guess final analysis, and we didn't need to know what the problem was to start with, did we? I mean, look, if you're depressed and you don't know why you're depressed or what to do about it, I guess we don't need to talk about depression. But if you're depressed and there is a solution to depression, if you have joint pain, and if there is a solution to joint pain, if you have heart trouble, and there is a solution to heart trouble, then maybe it's worth talking about. Disease. The only logical reason for taking drugs would be disease. Now, of course, there's recreational drugs. We just take cocaine and heroin because it makes us feel good. Like old Dr. Sansoni told me, I was in the hospital for an operation, and he said, you know, to control the pain, we're going to give you this drug. What do they call it? It's on the tip of my tongue here. We call it heroin on the street. It's morphine in the hospital. We're going to give you this morphine. He said, this morphine, boy, you're going to like this. And they shot me up with this morphine. And he was right. Boy, that's really great stuff. And I can readily understand why heroin addicts really like heroin. Feels real good. Hell, it's better than Jack Daniels. Without a hangover. So, when he told me that, and gave me that shot, and I experienced how good this morphine is, I said, you know, and he warned me. He said, now, you don't want to phony this up and say, God, I hurt real bad, so you can get more morphine, because when you're on this morphine, in about 3 or 4 days, you're going to become addicted to it. And it's damn hard to kick the addiction, and if you don't kick the addiction, you're going to become a heroin addict. I was 16 years old. And I said, oh my God, a heroin addict. And so I said, no, I took that one shot. And I said, no, I don't want any more. Nurse said, keep coming back. She said, well, you're hurting? She's real concerned. Are you hurting? You're hurting? Well, boys and girls, just because you've got pain, does that mean that we need morphine? Just because we've got pain, does that mean that we need some drug? I mean, can't we tolerate some pain? Just, you know, think about it for a minute. You know, how much pain can you take? Well, the nurse was trying to sell more morphine to me. I said, no, I feel fine. No, it doesn't hurt bad. Yeah, it hurts a little bit, but I can handle it. I mean, she was pushing morphine. And thank God the doctor, you know, had his head screwed on straight. You know, he said to me, he said, no, son, you're going to like this. But, you know, in 3 or 4 days on this morphine now, if you keep telling us, you know, how bad it hurts, we'll keep giving you more morphine to control the pain. But, you know, you don't want to be lying about this, because you'll turn into a heroin addict. And I can see why you heroin addicts out there like heroin. It's great stuff. Great stuff. But then when you get addicted to it, you can't kick the habit. Kind of like nicotine, I guess. So I guess the question arises, well, what's the solution? Well, you know, in the Bible, there is a solution for medical malfunction. There's actually a solution. There's a cause and effect relationship between disease, pain, suffering, plague, and drugs. And the solution is obey God and keep His commandments. Now, here's the commandments you need to practice. There are 18 health laws. There's also a bunch of economic laws. If you practice all of the economic laws and you violate one of the health laws, you'll get sick. So practicing the health laws do not help you in the overall scheme of disease. I mean, you know, just be logical. Here's what happens. There's a law in the Bible that says don't eat fat. People that eat fat down at McDonald's, remember their hamburgers are 30% fat, take in an abnormal amount of cholesterol. The cholesterol plugs up your arteries, plugs up your heart valves. It gives you heart attack and stroke. So God comes along and He says, hey, troops, don't eat fat. I did not design you to eat fat. I designed dogs to eat fat. I designed buzzards to eat fat. I designed people to eat meat and vegetables and fruits, but not fat. Do not eat fat. Stop eating fat. Don't think about fat. Get it out of your diet. Don't do it. All right, so now we come along and we say, well, God must have made a mistake. Because fat tastes so good, especially with salt. And so at Wendy's, they make them hot and juicy. Well, what in the hell did you think that juice was? It's not Jack Daniels. It's not Wild Turkey, boys and girls. That juice that's in that Wendy's, that's fat, liquid fat. Put a little salt on it. Tastes real good. It's like heroin. Tastes real good. You're going to like that stuff. But if you get addicted to it, which people that eat these fast foods, they get addicted to these diets. In fact, they put MSG in there to help you get addicted to it. And so you eat that, and then it plugs up your arteries, gives you a heart attack. Now, it's great for the economy. It's great for the medical industry, and it's just great for heart surgeons. Not so good for you, not so good for taxpayers, not so good for a lot of other people, but it's real good for heart surgeons and hospitals that are selling Roto-Rooter services for damaged heart valves and heart transplants and so on. And you get heart attack and you get stroke from it. It's a cause and effect relationship. It's no big mystery. smoke Camel cigarettes and get lung cancer. You know, eat McDonald's and get cardiovascular disease. So, if that's the cause and effect relationship, could we then go to a source of information that could tell us how to live without getting these maladies? See, I've lived my life so far. I don't have arthritis. I don't have rheumatism. I don't need Vioxx. I don't need Celebrex. I don't need morphine. And so, because I'm not suffering this pain, there isn't any reason for me to buy Vioxx, and so I didn't buy it, and so then I didn't get a heart attack that came from it. I didn't suffer from the side effects. I'm very, very satisfied with my program, my health program. It's a very good program. I recommend it highly. That's what I'm doing here today. I'm recommending the health program from the Bible. I know it's a wild, crazy source, as old Steve Martin would say, a wild and crazy idea, but let me give you a couple of ideas. If you turn over here to Leviticus chapter 26, why don't you try this? Leviticus chapter 26. Turn to verse 16. And I'll pull down my 10-power loop here so I can read this fine print. In verse 16, he says, in verse 14, let's start at the beginning, he says, but if you will not hearken unto me, and if you will not do all of these commandments, notice the word all, A-L-L, all of these commandments, and if you shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgments, so that you will not do all of my commandments, but that you break my covenant. See, we got a contract with God. We negotiated this contract with God out at Mount Sinai with Moses, our first representative. This is where representative government comes from in Israelite countries. We negotiated this deal. God said, I'll give you all these benefits, 33 benefits, if you practice my law. We've collected the benefits and didn't practice the law. So he says, now if you don't practice my law, and if you break my covenant, I also will do this unto you. Here's what I'm going to do to you. Penal clause to the contract. I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, and the burning ague that shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart. And you shall sow your seed in vain, and your enemy shall eat it. Leaving out that last sentence. It shall cause sorrow of heart. That's depression. Depression. Now, you're depressed because God comes along and says, this is going to be the result of the violation of my law. And then when this result occurs, then you're going to go to the doctor or the psychiatrist who's going to prescribe to you some antidepressant like lithium or something else, which in turn is going to have side effects, which in turn is what we've been talking about this week, isn't it? So coming right out of the chute in Leviticus 26:16, let's apply the opposite to that. Let's obey God, keep His commandments, and then we won't become depressed. We won't need the antidepressant. Therefore, we will not become suicidal. Therefore, we will not shoot up our local school. I mean, it could be of great benefit to everybody. Of great benefit to you, you'll be happy and smiling. Of great benefit to the other students in the school because you're not killing them. And of great benefit to you because you're not committing suicide. And that's just by obeying God and keeping His commandments. Now, there are 18 of these health laws. I'm not going to get into the health laws. I've covered those many times before. If you'll go to our archives, you can pull out those health programs. And I go through those 18 health laws. No need doing it five times. I mean, I've already done it once, and it's on the archives. And all of a sudden, your depression disappears. You don't need, and it saves you money. I mean, hell, you put extra money in your pocket, and you can spend that money down at Six Flags riding the roller coaster. And I guarantee you, there's no depression on the roller coaster. Now, in Leviticus 26, verse 25, he makes mention of this one more time. He says, I'm going to bring a sword, that's war, upon you, that's going to avenge the quarrel of my covenant. And when you're gathered together within your cities, I'm going to send a pestilence among you. Do you get that? I'm going to send a pestilence among you. Well, pestilence is a communicable disease, like avian bird flu. Notice this. He says, when you're gathered together in your cities, huddled together in your cities, I'm going to send this pestilence among you. Now, they're estimating that the death toll could reach 2 million here in the United States. Hell, it was more than that the last time we had flu in this country in 1918-1919. They estimated that it killed, I think, 2.5 million in this country. About 50 million worldwide, maybe 100 million. Nobody actually knows, you know, but 50 to 100 million people, 2 million or 3 million in this country. And they're saying, hey, we think there's going to be a repeat of that. We think that with all of our drugs and modern technology and all of our vaccines, that we can hold the death rate down to about what it was in 1918. With twice or three times as many people, we can actually kill fewer people. Now, over in Deuteronomy chapter 28, there's a little bit more said about this. So if you flip over here to Deuteronomy 28, he gets a little hotter and heavier over here. He says, now, if you don't practice my law, you know, if you get uppity with me, give me the finger, dink around with me, he said, I'm going to go ballistic on you, and here's what I'm going to do to you. So in verse 15, he says, it'll come to pass, if you will not hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God, to observe to do all of his commandments and his statutes, which I command you this day, that all these curses shall come upon you and overtake you. He says, here's what I'm going to do to you now if you get uppity with me. And so he starts off over here. This is Deuteronomy chapter 28, and about verse 21. Here's what he says. He says, the Lord shall make the pestilence cleave unto you until he has consumed you from off the land where you go in to possess it. He's going to consume you with pestilence like avian flu. Then in verse 22, he goes on to say, the Eternal will smite you with a consumption, that's TB, and with a fever, that's avian flu, and with an inflammation, that's cancer, and with an extreme burning, and with the sword, and with blasting, and with mildew, and other curses. Notice these health problems. He says, here's what I'm going to do. Take a look in the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. Take a look at the Western world, and you'll find out that we are a bunch of sick puppies over here. We've got lots of diseases. Of course, we've got lots of drugs, and we've got lots of cures. And we don't have any cures, but we got a lot of treatments. A lot of drugs, a lot of treatments, no cures. And did you notice that that's precisely what God said he was going to do to us now after we didn't practice the law? Now just ask yourself, do we Americans, Canadians, and Australians practice the Mosaic Law? Do we practice the law of God? The answer is no. No, we don't. Are we sick? Yep. Yep, we are. Hey, this is Bible prophecy coming to pass right before your earballs. Now he goes on a little bit further over here, and he's got a couple of more statements. He says over in Deuteronomy 28, verse 27. So here in verse 27, he goes on. He says, the Eternal will smite you with the botch of Egypt and with the emerods. That's preparation H time. And with the scab and with the itch, whereof you cannot be healed. We have incurable diseases, incurable symptoms. We have these symptoms that modern medicine just says, my God, we just don't know what to do for it. We got a treatment, but we don't know what to do about that disease. We don't know how to cure that. Well, boys and girls, wouldn't you be better advised if you didn't get the disease to start with? I've mentioned there's 9 cures to cancer. Hulda Clark over here, remember her book? This is called The Cure for All Cancers by Hulda, H-U-L-D-A, Clark. You might get a copy of the book. It's kind of a big, thick book, and she's a naturopathic doctor, naturopathy kind of guy, person. She's a lady, woman. And she says, hey, listen, I've been in this practice for a long time, curing people of cancer, and yeah, it's fairly easy to do. Somebody going to write me an email now and going to say, well, you fool, you blind, you nitwit, don't you know cancer is incurable? No, I don't know that. Write me an email, tell me, cancer is incurable. I didn't know that. I need somebody like you to explain that to me. Deuteronomy 28, verse 28, he's got a little more to say. He goes on and he says, the Eternal will smite you with madness and blindness and astonishment of heart. Madness and astonishment of heart. Isn't that why you're taking these antidepressants? Isn't it because you're depressed? Isn't it because you're having madness? You're having astonishment of heart. And don't you say, I don't know what I'm going to do? I was watching TV last night and they're talking about Medicare. And they got 5 million people they're trying to persuade to sign up for Medicare. Now you got 42 million people eligible for Medicare. Free prescription drugs. I didn't sign up. I'm one of those 5 million that didn't sign up. I'm not going to sign up. I'm going to stay as far away from drugs and Medicare and doctors and hospitals as I can get. You know, I might need a doctor someday, but I'm not out there drumming up business for doctors or hospitals. So I'm going to practice these health laws. I figured that if I practice these health laws, shucks, maybe I won't get sick. At least that's what God tells me in the Bible. And I thought, well, you know, unless he's lying to me. Unless he's lying to me. And the doctors, they tell you very plainly, hey, listen, we don't know what causes that. Now, there are some diseases, you know, like vitamin C deficiency. You know, what the hell do they call that vitamin C deficiency now? Not pellagra, it's scurvy. Scurvy. You get this scurvy, see? And they give you vitamin C, and they say, isn't modern medicine marvelous? We've cured your scurvy. Oh, come on, kids. Scurvy is a vitamin deficiency. I told you that last time. All disease comes from either vitamin or mineral deficiency. You're starving to death. Or you're toxic. Somebody's poisoning you. That's what drug side effects are. It's poison. All drugs are poison. Don't forget that. All the authorities tell you all drugs are poison. All drugs have side effects. Side effects affect people in different ways. Wouldn't we be better served if we didn't take any drugs at all, didn't have any side effects, and didn't have any disease? That's one of your 33 benefits, by the way, if you'll practice this law. Now, of course, if you violate the financial laws, there's 15 of those, you'll get poor, you won't be able to pay your bills, and it'll probably make you very depressed. I noticed that when I had credit cards and checks, and I dealt in unjust weights and balances, and I was borrowing money and paying usury and interest, I was very depressed over money. Very depressed. So one day I got to thinking about that, and I said, you know, what if I quit using unjust weights and balances? What if I quit using Federal Reserve notes? What if I stopped using credit cards? What if I quit paying interest or usury on these debts? What if I dealt in just weights and balances, gold and silver, got paid for what I did, and I thought, well, let me give it a try. And I did, and I tried it, and sure enough, works like a shot. Now I'm not in debt. I'm not depressed over my debts because I don't have any debt. And the only financial problems I ever had was debt. It was figuring out, how in the hell am I going to pay the rent and pay these bills? I don't have any bills. I avoid bills like I avoid fat. I avoid fat like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. And in the final analysis, I obey God, keep His commandments, and in the process, I avoid the diseases, I don't need the drugs, and I don't suffer any drug side effects. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide 7 days a week over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. All right, we're out of time. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.